I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Take a seat. Right over there, sat on the stairs, say or leave. The cabinets are bare, and I'm unaware of just how we got into this mess. Got so aggressive, I know we meant all good intentions. So pull me closer, why don't you pull me close? Why don't you come on over? I can't just let you go. Oh, baby, why don't you just meet me in the middle?
We continue here on a Friday. That is, my daughter Colleen loves that song, so. Amy thinks it's all right, too. Joining me is Amy Cotta.
Cotta, yeah.
All right. And Amy is the founder and the executive director of Medals of Honor. And I was walking around this morning, and one of the cool parts about being here is there's so many awesome stories. And people will come on and talk about them. And I walked up to Amy's husband, because he has glasses on. He looked like a smart guy. I said, "You must be in charge." He said, "No, I'm not." And exactly. And I said, "Well, I'm looking for somebody who might want to come on the radio." And he looked, and he said, "You need to talk to her." And so Amy joins us. Medals of Honor. Hold on. First of all, you. Born and raised where?
Born and raised in St. Louis, Missouri.
Are you a Cardinal fan?
Oh, everybody was asking
exactly.
That. I feel so bad.
Oh, you're not? No, that's good that you're not.
I'm not a baseball fan.
Well, that's good. Then you won't be disappointed because Cardinals didn't make the playoffs.
I didn't even know. That's bad.
All right, that's good.
I'm not going to ever be allowed back in the city
no,
in St. Louis. I don't live there anymore, so that's good.
Exactly. So they can bar you. It doesn't
yeah,
not going to impact anybody. And so, you're born and raised in St. Louis. Your connection to the Marine Corps comes how?
Well, let me start by saying that every single man in my family has served in the service, including during wartime, and including my ex-husband. And so my direct connection to the Marine Corps is my son. At 17, I signed him over to the Marine Corps.
Why in God's name would you do that? He's a baby.
Yeah, he was a baby, and I had a mommy meltdown because of it. I need to say that I always knew Tyler was going to join the military, like ever since he was a little kid. And 9/11 affected him as much as it did the rest of the country. And he, at that moment, he knew he wanted to serve, and he was always the protector of our family.
How old was he in 2001?
You mean in 2001?
2001, when it happened.
Oh my God, you're gonna make me do math.
Yeah,
right?
I was sorry about that.
Yeah, so I see I got
this. This is an indictment of our public school system.
Oh no! For the St. Louis.
St. Louis public school system, you suck, alright?
So my 17-year-old was a baby at the time, so yeah. He would have been really, really, really young.
So he grows up, and you just know by the things he's interested. He's playing Army all the time, and what is it?
He was the protector of the family.
Right.
His dad always told him, "Hey, take care of your mom, take care of your sisters." He was my protector while I was pregnant, even as a little guy. You know, he was always, you know, take care of your mom. So he was watching after me and us, and so he also was that person that walked through the house and multiple times throughout the night to make sure that all the doors and windows were locked before we went to bed. He kept, as a teenager, he kept a weapon under his mattress. And
like what kind of weapon?
I don't know,
like
some kind of archaic looking like club thing that had spikes on it.
Nice.
And I was like, "What is that for?" And he's like, "In case somebody breaks in the house and I have to get boozy on them."
There you go.
So he was always a protector, and he went through 4 years of JROTC in high school, and he's an artist, and the plan was he was going to go to college and then you know, go through ROTC and then serve. But God or the universe, whatever you'd like to call it, had different plans for Tyler. The week before graduation, somebody stole his portfolio. So 4 years of artwork that he needed to get into college, because he wasn't one of those kids that like pre-planned, you know, and got accepted before they ever got out of high school. So now he didn't have any way or anything to show to be able to get into art school. And he was like, you know what, I'm just going to forget college. I'm just going to go directly into the into service. And he was like, oh, and by the way, I talked to this Marine recruiter, and I'm no longer going in the Army. I'm going into the Marine Corps. And, you know, first in, right? they're the ones running towards the sound of bullets. And I'm going... My first thought was, oh my God, it's 2011, we're still losing a ton of people overseas and also here at home. Mm-hmm. And I just was like, Tyler, like, this isn't a video game. Have you really thought about this? I'm going to support you in whatever you do, but I need to know that you know that you don't have multiple lives. Because my son is very much the person that if push came to shove, he would give his life for somebody else's. So he has that Marine mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And it scared the bejesus out of me, as it would any parent. You know?
I
love the fact that I raised a strong, brave man, but it scares me to death that I raised a strong, brave man. So he wasn't supposed to leave until like November, and he decided to go in. He volunteered to go in early to boot camp, and I'm like, what are you doing? No.
You're trying to kill me? You're trying to put me in my grave.
Yeah, so all this time that I thought that I had to process him, my baby boy leaving, and process that I'm no longer going to be his protector, and that I no longer am there to help if he needs help. That people say all the time, oh, I've got this anxiety, I'm sending my child off to college. And I say all the time, take that, add rocket fuel to it, light a match, set that sucker on fire, and that's what it's like to possibly be sending your child off to war or into the service during wartime. And so Tyler went in early. He went in open contract.
Yes. So he could be one of the chosen.
Yes. And God bless his recruiters. I'm still in contact with one of them to this day. Love the guy. He prepared me well, but he over-prepared me. But I'm glad he over-prepared me. He was, you know, he would say, you know, it's not a matter of if or when he's going to be deployed, it'll be where and how often. And I knew families that had lost loved ones during deployment, and also ones that were fighting their own battles here on American soil, and those that had lost the war here at home. So I knew the risks. And again, that scared the bejesus out of me.
You can say crap.
Oh, good. Okay.
We're okay with it.
I used to work in radio in St. Louis. So I'm like,
am
I going to get fined?
Different rules over the air radio. This is internet radio.
Right, well,
nobody like, yeah, we don't care what you think.
Well, it scared the shit out of me.
There you go.
Tyler, I put his, he had his birthday, so I put an 18-year-old kid on a bus, and I wasn't prepared. And, you know, when it was funny, because I'm a very strong person, and usually not short for words, and when I was signing the paper for Tyler to join, I couldn't speak. It took every ounce of strength I had to hold the pieces that wanted to fall on the floor together. And my hand was shaking, and I was just like, just don't cry, because I didn't want to embarrass Tyler. You know, how embarrassing is that? You know, your father, my mom, you know? So, when I, you know, after we had that discussion of, hey, you know that you don't have multiple lives. If you get shot, you get killed, you save somebody else, whatever the millions of things that could go wrong, you're not coming back.
You don't get to come back.
Yeah, you don't get to come back from that. And he went and he thought about it. And he came back and he gave me a really long list, well thought out, of why he was doing the things that he was doing. And so that was the only reason why I signed for him. But it didn't make it any better.
You know, Amy, we go through that. We can relate to it. When we leave to go to Iraq, Afghanistan, most of us, the night you say goodbye to your family, it's the same exact emotion that you had by signing that paper. You were accepting the fact that you might give him up ultimately. And that's what we go through. As you hug your children, the terrifying thought that I may never see him or her again. You know, people will ask, like, well, what's the scariest part? The scariest part is it happens in your house.
Yeah.
The night you leave. Because we're professionals, and we're good at what we do. You know, I mean, you're never so glad that you join the Marine Corps when you go fight. You don't have to look to see if they're coming. They'll die coming to help you if you scream help. But your babies, right, your wife, all of that, you say goodbye. And you have the voice in your head, and they have the voice in their head, which is the voice that you had in your head.
Yeah.
And the voice that we don't like to talk about. Like, I mean, and so we,
yeah. Yeah, it's...
terrifying. It's beyond terrifying.
Yeah, it's...
But the thing I love the most,
yeah,
I may lose.
I told people all the time, like, if we were talking in 2011, mm-hmm, we would not be having this conversation, because anytime somebody asked me about Tyler, I could not speak.
Right.
I physically lost the ability to speak, because I was so torn up inside. And as crazy or stupid as it may sound, I was in a place of mourning. I was mourning the loss of everything that I knew, everything that was comfortable, everything that was safe, was predictable, was now ripped away from me. And I often, when he was at boot, I always wondered, oh my God, how's he doing? And it wasn't that I didn't think that he would be okay.
Right.
It was, is he going to blame me for signing that paper? What if he goes through and he hates it? But that wasn't the loud voice. The loud voice was, did you just sign your son's death certificate? And how on earth are you going to live with yourself if that happens? And I realized one day that having this feeling of loss is just a microscopic glimpse of what families go through that actually lose their loved ones. And I thought, oh my God, if I feel like this, if I am this devastated and I can talk to my kid in 13 weeks, and I hate that the Marine Corps tells me it's only 12 weeks because they're gone for 13. I counted every day of it. Like, my brain, I could not wrap my head around what that loss must be like. And I went into a depression. Stupid as it may sound, the time that Tyler was gone, I got deeply, deeply depressed. And I had to find an outlet. And I finally went to my husband and I said, look, I have a choice to make. I either have to go and get help and get some type of medication to help get me through this unknowing,
right,
or I'm going to have to find an outlet. And my outlet was, I laced up steel toe combat boots, Marine Corps combat boots, and I started wearing them everywhere I went. because that was my way of feeling connected to my son. I wore them in evening gowns. I wore them to the grocery store. I wore them in shorts, no matter where I went. And then I did a 5K in them. And then 2 weeks later, I went and I did...
Now, what kind of boots? Were they black boots or desert boots?
Oh, they were the heavy steel-toe desert boots, like the...
Why did you get steel-toed, for God's sake? So were you, are you clueless? You didn't have to wear the steel-toed.
No, so these were ones... A little bit of the backstory was is I got these boots from... I was at a fundraiser for another military nonprofit.
Okay.
And part of your... participation in that event was buying boots. So they were base steel toe, like 5 pound, just heavy and not broken in boots. But it was good though, because suffering.
So more connected.
Yeah, it filled that void of lack of connection. And I ran a half marathon 2 weeks after that 5K. Now I'm not a runner. And
bullshit. You
don't I'm not a runner.
Come on. In boots.
I move. I'm a shuffler. I'm a very slow shuffler. But at that time, I wasn't doing anything. So, but the amazing thing happened while I was out on those two courses is I felt that connection with Tyler. And, you know, I was going to tell him how crazy his mom was when he got back of like, hey, look how many miles I put in the boots, whether he thought I was stupid or not. I didn't care because in my brain it all made sense. And but through the pain of running in boots and just the pain in general and people running by me and tapping me on the shoulder and going, hey, what's up with the boots, and having that moment of connection with them and being able to tell them, you know, I'm doing this for my son, he's away at boot camp, and crying with them. Like, usually it was either somebody that's like, oh my God, thank you for your son's service, or it was them themselves or a military family. And slowly but surely, it was like layers of an onion peeling off. And that's when I realized the importance of having a physical outlet for whatever that mental pain and suffering that we're carrying on the inside.
It's interesting. Mark Jones, it was just on, running rescued him. He had been in the Marine Corps, participated in the march up in 2004 from Kuwait to Baghdad.
Wow.
And then got out. And one of the things about our tribe, you know, anybody who knows anything about tribes, the worst thing that you can do to somebody in the tribe is banish them from the tribe.
Yeah.
When you leave and you, I don't know, if you don't stay connected well enough and you feel like you're dislocated, you know, that's when bad things happen. And he had bad things going on in his life and he started running. And he said, running saved me. I rediscovered the discipline. I rediscovered purpose. I rediscovered that I could do things, and just... an incredible story. Talk to us about how does that morph into all of this?
You see a middle-aged woman running around in combat boots, you know, it tends to gain a little of attention. So I started catching the attention of media, and other moms and family members started reaching out to me. You know, hey, my son's leaving for, you know, the Army or for the Marines or whatever branch, and I want to know more about what you're doing because I need something. I need something to feel connected. And so what started off as a way for me to heal myself became like this national thing, and I didn't realize at the time that lacing up combat boots was about to change my life forever and touch so many other lives. Because eventually, I met some dear friends of mine through my boot running, the Henrys, and he's an Army combat veteran and has PTSD, survivor's guilt, which I'm sure a lot of the
pretty
listeners
common.
Are very familiar with that. And So I would see the pain that his entire family would go through over the course of hitting these anniversaries.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a doer. Like, I may crawl in the corner and lay there for a minute and, you know, feel sorry and cry or whatever, but I'm a doer. It's like, let's fix something. Let's do something. Let's take back something. Let's help somebody. And I felt helpless because how can I help him? There's nothing we can do to really, you know, like, snap your fingers and help somebody. But I wanted to do something. So I, at this point, had been running not only the boots, but I added a military pack, and I had gone from 5Ks to half marathons to 50Ks, and I had just learned how to swim, and I was planning on doing an Ironman and wearing a pack, and the pack had weight, and in the boots. And so I asked, I said, do you think the families of your teammates would allow me the privilege of wearing their photos on my pack? So we got the okay from all 14 families. So now every race that I did, not only was I in the boots and the pack, but now people were able to see the photos and the names of Jason's teammates.
Right.
And to see Jason light up, to know that his buddies were being honored and remembered, fueled my passion for what I was doing, because I saw that it was making...
It was easing their pain.
Yeah, you know, I don't even know if the pain ever gets eased, but if we can do just something...
It never goes away.
Yeah.
But those moments when people do that, it whether it makes you not focus on the pain... Because, I mean, we deal with this. This is our life. This
yeah.
is our tribe. And you know, the things that people learn in our tribe is, if they're lucky and they meet smart people, is that it's not going away. And you're okay.
Yeah.
You're going to learn how to coexist with it.
Yeah.
You're going to learn how to coexist with it. But one of the things we talk about is, in a concept that I call post-traumatic winning, is when you can get your shit together, and you can understand that you've been changed marginally as a human being, you're still 90% the same person.
Yeah.
But you're changed a little bit. And how do you deal with that? When you can learn, understand it a little bit, and then you can take your experiences and you can help other people that are going through similar trauma, but don't have the education we have about it, because we do. We live around it. We deal with it. You can touch them and tell them, hey, you're okay. You're not going to get over it. And they look at you and they say, what? Yeah, you're okay. You're not supposed... God has not invented the amount of time to heal this world.
Yeah.
And they look at you and they say, are you a therapist? And you say, no, I'm a Marine. and they laugh. Like, what? But I live trauma. I know trauma.
Yeah.
It's my companion. And if you want to sit and talk, I can help you a little bit. And it's all very common sense stuff. Like, before we came on the air, I was telling Amy about my trauma menstrual cycle. And
I'm feeling that, by the way.
She was telling me that she's had to walk away a few times already today. And it's just odd that on some days you can talk about it, and then other days the thought of it. Like, I was down at the National Museum of the Marine Corps 2 days ago, and I'm watching the movie. And there's me and two other people, a couple in there. And I've got tears coming down my face, and I keep wiping the tears off. And I think, you know, at the end of this movie, we're going to all walk out together, and they're going to look at me and go, what a pussy, this guy's, who is this loser? But you know what? I had great advice when something really terrible happened, and my gunnery sergeant looked at me and he said, you know you're never going to get over this. And I said, what? What are you talking about? Why would you say that to me? And he said, you need to know that. I said, well, who told you that? He said, Vietnam guys.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the thing that I've learned in my life is the truth needs no salesman, and the truth lands with a thug, right? And when you hear that, and any time it's ever bothered me, I've never felt like there's anything wrong with me, because my gunnery sergeant conveyed to me an oral tradition that's been handed down. Because I thought, like, well, where did the Vietnam guys learn that? They were the smartest guys in the classroom. They got told that by Vietnam guys and Korea guys. And it's this oral tradition that we have of this blue-collar mental health stuff that is timeless and true. Although I did make up the trauma menstrual cycle term, so I won't take credit for that. But it's the truth, though. Some days it's kicking your ass, and then other days you can deal with it. But until you learn about it, life is really hard because you don't understand it. Where is this coming from? And you have people telling you, you know, there's a purpose in this. You know, God doesn't give you more than you can handle. And your response is bullshit, man.
Exactly.
He is kicking my ass. Right? And time heals all wounds. Not this one, he's not healing. When does the healing start? And get away from me with that shit where people keep coming. And they're the most well-intentioned people, and it's awful. It's awful, and it makes people resentful and bitter, because we don't know how to do trauma. And instead of just giving you a hug, people feel like they need to say something. And it's hard. It's hard on families. Because they don't feel that. There isn't, what purpose is this? God needed him more than I needed him? To hell with that. I don't believe that. And so what you're doing, you know, is as good as it gets. Not forgetting and telling them that we care.
Well, and it's like having become such great friends with so many of these families that we work with. I mean, they've already experienced their worst nightmare. They've lost their loved one.
Right.
And we honor all loss of life. So it doesn't matter if it was killed in action, missing in action, training accidents, self-infliction, or medical issues directly related to service. Because, and I always like to preface this by saying, it's not to take valor away from anyone. But that pain and that suffering that mom, and I know that mom well, one of my dearest best friends lost her son, not overseas. She lost him at Camp Pendleton. And she said, my pain hurts. I miss Ben just as much. And Ben deserves to be remembered. And that's why we honor all loss of life in conjunction with military service and all dates of death. We've got one gentleman in our database from World War I, we've got World War II, we've got Vietnam. And for a lot of the Vietnam, it's the first time that their loved ones ever been honored.
I was watching the Commandant speak in North Carolina on the 23rd, so what was that, Tuesday? And he got very emotional. His trauma menstrual cycle started kicking in. And he looked out at everybody there, and he said, all you Marines, he said, look around. He said, you know how when you go to the airport, he said, you all haven't even done anything. And what do people say? Thank you for your service, right? All you Vietnam veterans, stand up. And then his jaw started quivering. When they came home, nobody said that to them.
Nope.
And they vowed that they would change this. And the reason you get treated like you do today is because they didn't get treated like that. And then he tried to talk, and he stopped himself. And he said, to all you Vietnam veterans, welcome home. And anybody who's spoken publicly, and I've done this, and every time I speak, I say the same thing. Are there any Vietnam veterans here? And they'll put their hands up. And I'll say, on behalf of everybody who serves today, thank you. We get treated incredibly well because of what you went through. And it's amazing that every time I do that, you'll finish speaking, and then people come up and talk, and then you're kind of packing up your stuff. And then you'll see these guys that are on the side of the wall and waiting, and they're all Vietnam veterans, and you know it. And as you're packing up, then they come up, and they say, I just wanted to say thank you. Because nobody's ever said thank you to me like that.
We've had family members come up and cry and hugging us and saying thank you. That's the first time that their loved one's ever been honored or remembered. And my family's quite a bit older than I am. So my cousin, who served in Vietnam, was actually old enough to be my father. And, you know, we've experienced loss from Vietnam. Michael came home, not Michael, and he suffered terribly his entire life.
They got told not to talk, stick in the closet, and and you know, it's really interesting as you get into kind of the culture of grief, of trauma. The first time I heard that was from a wife whose husband had taken his own life after he had been deployed to both Iraq and Afghanistan. In Iraq, he was on in a Buffalo vehicle that looks for mines, and then when they IEDs, and when they find them, they dig them up, and well, I mean, those things detonate, right? And he's in the vehicle, you know, 10 feet away, and he had traumatic brain injury. So she came on, and what we were talking about was lawyers who litigate against the VA. These guys come home and they're not right in the head. They don't fill out the appropriate papers. So then ultimately when they committed suicide, they got no benefits because suicide wasn't covered. And so so they went back and they fought the VA on these things. He was wounded in war. His brain was wounded in war, just as sure as he could have been wounded if he was shot in the chest.
Yeah.
And they won. So we were talking about that. And she said, you know, I've gone to, you know, to memorial services, and we're not allowed to sit with other wives. And I was said, well, I don't understand what it means. She said, well, my husband didn't die in combat. He died here. And other wives don't want us to sit with them. And the first time I heard that, I thought, make this stop. When does it stop? How could, you know, and then another side of me kind of understands, but as you said, I have very close friends. I've presented 2 flags in my life at funerals, both to the same woman.
Oh my God!
Her 3 sons served, 2 in the Marine Corps, 1 in the Army. They deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan. One killed in a motorcycle accident as he was on terminal leave, getting ready to go home. Another killed in a parachute jump at Camp Pendleton. And is her last any different? Because it's a training accident?
No.
Because it's
I can tell you firsthand, we're talking to these parents.
No.
And it's not to take anything away from those that did lose their life.
No. God, no.
Brenda said to me, she said, Amy, if Ben would have been given a choice, he would have much rather died by the enemy's bullet. He did not choose to go over that cliff. And Ben's been gone 20 years now. And his mother, God bless her heart, still to this day carries. I mean, she carries on, right?
Right.
Because she has to.
Right.
But that pain has never ceased. It hasn't diminished even a little bit. She gets by. She gets up in the morning. She sucks it up, and she tries to get through her day.
Yeah.
And you know, I've been very fortunate for God to put me in different places and different situations in my life, like getting to know the Gerhardts, and because now I will never know what her pain is fully, but I can have a better appreciation for it, and then. One of the first moms that reached out to me when I was just selfishly lacing those boots up for myself. Her son went into the Marine Corps shortly after mine did. And her son had done a couple combat tours. And I get this really strange Facebook message one day. And Jesse had come home and he served his 4 years. He rolled out of service. And the next day I find myself driving 45 minutes to his memorial service. And I'm sitting in the back of the room, and I can see my friend's head sitting in the front row, and I can't even bring myself to walk up there because not selfishly, my heart was just dying and aching and screaming in pain for this mom. And all I can do is sit there and think, oh my God, that could be Tyler. Mm. And because is her pain any less than somebody else's? No. Actually, you know, she thought everything was good. Jesse went overseas. He fought valiantly. He came home. He rolls out of service. Everything's supposed to be okay. Jesse takes his own life. And now I see my friend live with that loss every day. But I can tell you one thing, that if there's anything that can help, it's making sure that Jesse's not forgotten. And there's always bad days. And I've gotten messages from Trish, and she said, Amy, I was just having the worst day of my life, and I didn't know how I was going to go through it, because she went through guilt, thinking, you know, that she should have seen something, or she should have, you know, she should have been able to prevent the loss. And she said, I opened up my mailbox, and there was a package from somebody who ran in honor and memory of Jesse, and it had, you know, through our organization, there was the Jesse's Memorial bib, it was the runner's race bib, the runner's race medal, which is where the Medals of Honor comes from, and a sweet note. And she said, I needed that. She said, every time I'm having a really, really bad day, somebody's posting something on Facebook where they're honoring and remembering Jesse, or I'm getting something in the mail. And she's like, you know, she cannot have him here physically, but it's keeping him alive. I heard a saying once recently that we actually die twice. The first time is when we take our last breath, and the second time is the last time our name is spoken. That is the finality of death, is when we stop speaking these names. And so Medals of Honor are our mission and my passion. The reason why I get out of bed every morning is to make sure that these men and women that lost their life in service to our country are never forgotten, because my son's still in service. I know how lucky I am. It's something that I don't take for granted. And if I could snap my fingers and take away the pain for these Gold Star families, I would. But this is the closest thing that I can do. And with the help of everybody across the country that participates with Medals of Honor, that we can do. And using these events, like the Marine Corps Marathon, we've sponsored Gold Star families here. We're taking care of them the entire weekend. We have some veterans here that we're taking care of for the entire weekend. So not only are we acting as a living, breathing memorial for these fallen service members, but we're using sports and endurance sports as a means, an outlet for these Gold Star families and these veterans to use that as a way of healing and to honor a loved one, a fallen teammate, or somebody that they've never met.
You just kind of walk through what you guys do, how you do it. So walk through it again. First of all, tell everybody, how do they find you guys on the internet?
So our website is medalsofhonor.org, M-E-D-A-L-S of honor.org.
Okay. And so tell everybody what you do. So I walked over there, and there's this big stack of bibs.
Yes.
All right, and they have somebody's rank, somebody's name, somebody's branch of service, and the day that they pass.
Mm-hmm.
So explain what you guys do.
Yeah, so that's part of our living, breathing memorial is so families, and we have a few teammates, but it's mostly families, will register their loved one and put them into our database. And from that moment on, from then and forever, we will always have a memorial bib that has the handwritten name with the rank, first name, last name, branch, date of death, as you said. And we very intentionally handwrite them because now the families know that somebody sat down, took the time to write the read their loved one's name, to write it. And then we will go to big events like this at the Marine Corps Marathon, and we give runners the opportunity to carry that fallen service member with them. We ask nothing of the runner. We don't collect an email. We don't ask for a donation. Nothing. All we want is to make sure that there's eyes on those bibs, reading those names, saying those names. And with USAA this year, we've taken that a step further. So now, once you get that memorial bib here at the Marine Corps Marathon, you can also get a blank bib where you can write a message directly to that service member or to their family, thanking them for their service, for their sacrifice. And those messages are then going to be, the messages now, after they're written, are, we've got this huge memorial wall.
Just over there, right?
Yeah, yeah. So all of those messages of love and gratitude are on that wall. And then, so come Sunday, the runner will be wearing, for example, Lance Corporal Benjamin Gerhardt's bib. And then once the race is over, we're going to take those messages of love and gratitude, and they're going to be sent to the families. So we're closing that gap, making those connections so that those families know you're not alone. Somebody gives a damn. And then we also have participants that are donating the medals back to the families. So shortly after the Marine Corps, once those start coming in, we'll be processing those packages and sending them back to the families. But outside of the race endurance community, we also team up with sporting events. We're in Nashville. That's home base for us. Even though we're national, that's home base. So we do special events. We do concerts. Anything where we can honor those fallen service members that are in our database, we do it. For example, last Veterans Day, even though it's Veterans Day, they don't have football during Memorial Day, we teamed up with Vanderbilt University and the SEC. All 98 players dressed out in special uniforms, but we got approval from the SEC to remove their nameplates. Each one of those players had the name of a fallen service member on the jersey.
Good.
They learned about the service member. The families were able to give some information, like whatever they wanted that player to know about their loved one.
Wow.
So that information was passed on to that player. All the coaching staff had special uniforms made, or sweatshirts made, that had the names of fallen service members. And the best part was we had the families there. They carried the flag out on the field. And then during the telecast, we didn't know it at the time because we were there at the game. But when we watched the telecast later on the SEC network, during game stoppage, instead of talking about Tommy Openshaw's kick, they talked about the life of Lance Corporal Benjamin Gerhardt. So every time there was game stoppage, instead of talking about the play, they talked about the true hero on the field, which was the fallen service member that that athlete was playing for. So we're doing a game with Vanderbilt again this year, and then on Veterans Day we're doing a game with Boston College with men's basketball, and they're doing something similar. And the 18 service members that are being honored at that event, the families are given the opportunity to come to the game and to be acknowledged and loved on by everybody in attendance.
Talk to me about, and I'm sure there'll be people that listen that will have an idea about doing something,
mm-hmm.
but they haven't really acted on. Can you believe that what you started has turned into what it is today, where you're telling me that your name dropping on me, Vanderbilt, the SEC, right, the SEC network, Boston College.
And you're here doing stuff with USAA. Like, who would have ever...
Do you have to pinch yourself? And how long ago did you start doing this?
Medals of Honor, unknowingly to me, was born on an Ironman course. In 2014, at the inaugural Chattanooga Ironman, where I, at the time, was racing and my boots and a pack. And at that point, my 14 service members had turned into 21 because God kept putting people into my life that lost someone. And one of the moms of the 14 had said that it was her son's goal to do an Ironman someday. Well, he was killed in action. He was 24 years old. So me being the person that I am, I just learned how to swim, but I was like, hey, I'm going to do Ironman for Anthony, and I'm going to get, Anthony and I are going to get across that finish line together, and he's going to earn that medal. So my medal went to Tara Peterson after that race. And this is when you know God, or the universe, whatever you're comfortable with saying, for me it's God, he was at the wheel. Because everything that had happened to me, all the experiences, led up to me being able to have the capacity to do what I was doing. And my Facebook was getting blown up by people, because I had remembered a high-ranking Marine who was on my pack. And it was...
What was his name?
I don't remember. I'm so sorry. It was a girl that I knew through racing. I was racing for Team Chocolate Milk at the time, and she was one of the people there at the activation, and she told me about her brother. So I ended up carrying her brother as well, and I had asked, you know, out on the internet if somebody would please donate their medal. Well, to my surprise, I ended up turning medals away, because within 2 hours, I got 21 medals donated. So I had a medal, an Ironman medal, for every single service member on my pack. And I was like, okay, God, I'm listening, you know, because not only were people inundating me on the racer side, but also the families. And you got to remember, like, back in 2014, there still wasn't, like, boosting posts and stuff like that. So this was just organic spread. And so I threw up a Facebook page, called it Medals of Honor, because of that finisher's medal being given in honor and memory of that loved one. And within 4 weeks, there was like 900 people on there. And I'm getting inundated. And I was like, okay, God, I'm listening. So I stayed up till 2 o'clock in the morning, and I built out the website. And because I needed a way to be able to...
Websites were a lot of work, though.
Yeah, but I had to have a way to collect both sides of it. And so for that first year, I didn't go, oh, well, here's a business plan, I'm gonna have a nonprofit. My husband and I fully financed everything ourselves. I quit my job so that I could be a full-time fundraising athlete myself. And at the time, I was raising money for another military nonprofit. And that first year, just organically again, I sent out 150 packages to families. No single, any kind of advertising, nothing. And finally, I was like, okay, you know, our hands are kind of tied. I need a way, you know, we've got things that we need to be able to do, but we can't do them. We can't grow this without being a 501c3. So I finally bit the bullet, applied for the 501c3, and I'm thinking, there's no way I'm getting this thing. 3 weeks later, I get a letter in the mail. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, this is probably like an arm length full of things that we have to do. We got the 501c3. I'm friends with famous people that took like a year to get their 501c3. We got ours in 3 weeks. And it's just been doors flying open. And that's when you know that you're doing the work that you're supposed to be doing. And that doesn't mean to say that we don't hit roadblocks and obstacles and doors shut are meant for redirection, right? And not to shut you down. And there's days I literally work 7 days a week, and sometimes I'm up till 2 o'clock in the morning, sometimes I'm up at 4 o'clock in the morning. And there's a lot of days that I'm exhausted, because we are a very small crew. We don't have anybody on paid on staff. We live and die by volunteers. And so I often will do the work of 5 or 6 people. But when I'm able to sit back and see things through somebody else's eyes, like yours, and because a lot of times I don't give myself that joy.
because you're producing it.
Yeah, and it's amazing. In those moments where I told you that I had to walk away, that's when it's hit me. Of a lot of people will talk about impact,
right,
and it's just a word. But when you can see and feel that impact and that joy that's coming from somebody, I'm truly blessed. I'm exhausted, but I'm truly, truly blessed. And, you know, I often say, what would you not do for your own son? I have the privilege that if I could reach him, I can pick up my phone and I can at least call my son and possibly talk to him.
Nice.
And that's a privilege that many of our runners this weekend that we've sponsored, they'll never have that privilege again. And we all need to do what we can to take some of that pain away from them. Because I believe that the Gold Star families are the forgotten casualties of war. Their world's been rocked, and it's never going to change. And having befriended so many combat veterans now, having a way for them to be able to honor their teammates and taking back some of that power for themselves and giving them an outlet has been life-changing for a lot of them. And so I will work until I can't work anymore to make sure that that those opportunities are available.
So your advice to anybody who has an idea, who doesn't think, well, maybe that won't, I don't know how it would work out, what advice do you have?
Two pieces of advice. Don't fear failure, because the only true failure is when you fail to try.
Right.
Because, again, things are just course directions, right?
Right, right.
And the other is one of my favorite sayings, embrace the suck. Because there's going to be times where it sucks.
Right.
But
as long as you know it's going to suck.
Yeah.
And as long as you know that, you know that there's something on the other side.
Yeah, it's like a tide. The tide comes in, the tide goes out. But you're never going to experience it unless you're willing to walk in some sort of faith. And, you know, a lot of people's dreams die from procrastination. And none of us are guaranteed a tomorrow or even 5 minutes from now. So that was one of the biggest life changers for me, is overcoming fear of failure. Now I'll go out and I'll make shit happen. And I'll co-call somebody on email, which is a lot of what the stuff that we get done. We are this giant footprint, but this tiny organization, and we do shit that some of the big guys can't get done. But we do it because I'm hell-bent, and our volunteers are hell-bent on making stuff happen. And, you know, the worst thing that somebody can do is say no. I mean, okay, you're one step closer to a yes. So do not fear failure. Failure kills dreams.
Don't fear. How do people support you? They go to your website. What do they do? Can they donate there? Can they?
People can donate. And now that I know that I'm in a good company, my internal motto for this year was, let's break shit.
What does that mean?
Meaning,
that's a Marine thing. That's kind of the way we do it. But what does that mean to you?
Maybe I was meant to be a Marine. For me, it's like, okay, there's a wall there. So what? Let's break it. There's a ceiling. So what? Let's break it. Let's live as if there is no box. Not outside of the box. There is no box. why do things just because that's the way it's always been done? The nonprofit industry is so stagnant and just, it's in the dinosaur era. But everybody does everything the same way just because it's the same way that it's been done. So my motto for this year was, screw that, let's break shit. Let's be the innovators. Let's be the ones that are setting an example for others that may be held back in fear or living in that, that's just the way it's been done. So we will go make stuff happen. And it's amazing what you can get done just by asking. I mean, even with us being here with USAA today, that was just a conversation. And it wasn't, you know, but a lot of people are like, oh, well, the thought of it, you know, oh, what if they say no, or the hoops that you have to jump through. Who cares? Break it. Make your own hoop. So, yeah, I mean, the stuff we get done is, and the amount of work that we can get done with such little money, because we do not solicit donations. If you want to donate, there's a donate button, and God knows we have to have money, right, to fund our programs. But we exist for our mission, and God has shown that as long as we keep our mission first, it's going to be provided for us. Everything's been provided, and we build in our own sustainability. So we put on events. We work for our supper.
Right.
And if somebody wants to donate, that's great. But I don't want to live and die by donations and by grants, when I can go out and I can work my ass off and I can bring that money in by putting on our own 5Ks or putting on our own concerts. Because now we have sustainability. And it's up to us. If I don't do my job, there's not going to be money coming in. And I'm not putting my eggs in somebody else's basket.
Because your purpose is too important.
Yeah, we're mission first. Mission first, and do no harm.
That's a First Marine Division. That's a General Madison.
Really?
First, do no harm.
I had no idea.
Really? I thought that's where you got it.
No, I had no idea.
No, he loves those kind of small kind of advertising sayings that chunk a number of concepts inside of it into one short term. And that's one of them. No better friend, no worse enemy. That's Jim Madison.
It seems like such an incredible concept and an easy concept. And it's like, put your mission first. Everything else will fall into place. Don't do any more harm than's already been done. These people have already experienced the worst trauma of their life. So let's do everything we can to make sure that we do not intentionally cause them any more pain. I mean, it's just, life comes down to such simplicity. We just have to lead with our heart, and
the rest takes care of
itself. Yeah, the rest takes care of itself.
Now, before you get out of here, and I know I've kept you probably too long, but I don't care.
yeah, they're going, where is she?
Yeah, where's your husband? Look around. Like,
they probably think I'm in the bar across
exactly.
the street.
Exactly. Not that that's never happened before.
Never.
You and I were just talking about Woody Williams. And I was talking about how he, when we were talking about, instead of talking about Iwo Jima, where his actions earned him the Medal of Honor, we started talking about his foundation. And you and I were talking about memorials honoring Gold Star families. And you were saying that there's going to be one erected near your home.
Yeah. So I know they're working on it. I don't know where they are in that process. So we're based in Nashville, and Clarksville, Fort Campbell, is basically in our backyard. It's like an hour away from downtown Nashville. So, I'm really excited about that possibility. And being in that close proximity to Fort Campbell, you know, that whole surrounding area is unfortunately very rich,
right,
for lack of a better word, with Gold Star families.
Right.
So that area has seen a lot of loss, and I think that they absolutely deserve that memorial. And I'm really hopeful that it comes through. And you know, we're just a little guy, but you know, we're willing to help however we can.
No, it's just cool. The final question. You walk in this auditorium, this big exhibit hall, and you can, is it me or can you feel it?
Oh no, there's an energy here. There always is.
It's pretty cool.
I mean, how can there not be energy? It's the rings.
Exactly. First of all, we love ourselves.
Oh.
But there's a passion and there's an intensity that comes with the Marine Corps that you can feel when you come in here, and you can feel it in goodness. You can feel it, and so it's very, very cool. Very, very cool. You don't mind if I call you to come back on All Marine Radio, do you?
Oh, absolutely. I'd love to.
Okay. And anytime you're doing, I don't know how I get on your media list or whatever, make sure you let us know what you're doing, because this is what we do. And this is our tribe. Post-combat mental health is a big deal to us. Post-traumatic winning is something that I talk about and that I want to share with you, because like you, when trauma visits your life, there's a door in that room that's so dark and smoky, kind of in the back, in the corner, that takes you to a greater place in life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you don't really know it when you walk into the recruiter's office to sign that, and you can't even see it because you can't even see 2 feet in front of your face. But our job is to spread that. Is that we as veterans and our families have a special role in our communities, because we deal with trauma a lot, and we can spread the gospel of post-traumatic winning, right? That you're not going to get over it. That it is okay to be damaged. That you do have a trauma menstrual cycle. That if you're dealing with PTSD and you think you can drink and do drugs and effectively deal with it, you're mistaken. Because if you do, you'll be the first person on the planet that doesn't. It's a loser, and you have to stop. And if you do those things, and I love to use non-military examples, like Elizabeth Smart, there's a little girl who has every ticket punched to be a dysfunctional human being, but she's not having it. Like Elizabeth Smart and like all kinds of people around this country, we can make a huge difference in our community because we're special, we're veterans. And so we're advocates of post-traumatic winning. There's nothing we can do about the past, but there's all kinds of stuff we can do about the future. And it's people like you that live that we'd love to have on the program to talk about these kind of things, to spread the gospel of post-traumatic winning and about doing good things. And again, there's nothing you can do to ease anybody's pain that lives with it. But you can do something about their present.
Yep.
And you can make them feel better knowing that they'll never be forgotten. So
absolutely. You know, our director of veteran outreach, although he's Army, don't hold it against him.
We love him.
Not as much,
but we love him.
He was a Sergeant First Class Joseph James, and he did 4 combat tours, got into a fight with an IED on his 4th and final tour, lost his commander, Major Rosenberg, forgive me, James, I'm sorry. And Joe also lost both of his legs, and he had to tourniquet himself and save his own life just to get out of the vehicle. So that's, you know, God putting people into my life to share those experiences with me and with our organization, so that way we can get a glimpse of those understandings. And, you know, my son-in-law is on a year-long deployment right now with the Army. So, you know, knock on wood, God has given me every glimpse except for actually having to face that trauma of losing my child. You know, if you ever want an Army guy, he's a great one. Joe's actually racing this weekend. He's doing the hand cycle. He came last year. This is a perfect example. So Joe came last year with us, and you know, we were handing out memorial bibs, and he saw firsthand the impact that this race and has on the participants and the families. And when he saw all of those guys, you know, in the wheelchairs and the hand cycles, he was so inspired by it. Now he's racing his first hand cycle event on Sunday. And lo and behold, it's the Marine Corps Marathon. I get the last laugh, Joe.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
He always gives me trouble,
Amy,
for the Marines.
First of all, thank you very much for coming over here and doing this. Tell everybody how they find you guys again.
Yeah, so it's medalsofhonor.org, M-E-D-A-L-S. ofhonor.org, and then we're on Facebook and Instagram, Medals of Honor.
All right. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and wrap things up live from the Marine Corps Marathon on a Friday. We're here in the exhibit hall where runners are picking up all their stuff, and been privileged enough to have Amy Cotta, who's the founder and executive director of Medals of Honor. So don't touch that dial. More of Auburn Radio coming up right after this.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Yeah, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
This is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
There's a reason that this segment's starting with good guitar music.
Feel it coming. Till you wake up on the throne. I wonder where you are. Is it gonna fall?
I'm hoping that if I play some good guitar music often enough, then maybe my next guest will be able to play some. In Afghanistan, he used to kill me. He used to take out his frustrations on my eardrums, playing bad guitar music next to me.
That was good music, man. I was guitar.
All right, I was saying goodbye to Amy, so sorry about that. I have in front of me two coins that Woody Williams gave me. How about that shit? Herschel Woody Williams, Medal of Honor Foundation. So that's one coin he gave me. And if you flip it over, it has a Purple Heart, it has the 3rd Marine Division emblem, and then it has Medal of Honor, his signature, February 23rd, 1945. That's the day the flag went up. Both of them. Yeah, so nobody gets pissed at me. Then he gave me another coin, and he looked at me and he said, he says, "Do you know I have a ship named after me?" Now, and we were off the air, right? So I looked at him and I said, "Fuck yes, I know it. You got a ship named after you." And he started laughing, and he said, "Here," and he pulls out a coin, and it says Herschel Woody Williams, ESB4. And then he looked at me and he said, "Those are my words." And I can't read them on the coin. And so anyway, I mean, what a day. So we're going to wrap things up here. We'll be back here tomorrow morning, and we'll be broadcasting live here tomorrow. And we'll broadcast from the race itself on Sunday. So just an awesome day. And so if you just tuned in, don't touch that dial. You'll hear this recorded, and then I'll get this stuff posted on the website as soon as I can. But an awesome day here. My thanks to everybody here with the Marine Corps Marathon. They've just been fantastic. If you're in the area, make sure you come down. The expo goes on today and tomorrow, and so come on by. So we'll take a quick break. And I've got to save the file and then turn it on. So if you're just tuning in, don't touch that dial. More of this program coming up next. Have a great day on a Friday. On Marine Radio, over and out.